and possible work session, but we're only going to do a hearing today on Senate Bill 904, which would abolish the Dispute Resolution Commission. I have a whole list of people signed up, and I don't see anybody in this room in favor of this bill today, so it should be an interesting hearing. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to start off with a summary from our council, and then what I'd like to do is have you come up in groups of three, and to try to, if you have written testimony, try to summarize it so that we can make sure that everyone here is heard by the time we have to leave. So appreciate your being here, and we'll move into the hearing.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 904, sponsored by the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, abolishes the Dispute Resolution Commission and transfers some of the duties of the Attorney General's office. Continues commission duties, functions, and powers until superseded or repealed by the Attorney General. Continues funding for local dispute resolution programs. We have the dash one amendments in front of you, which do not supersede the bill. I simply amend the bill.
As I understand it, the dash one amendments clarify the court, the court's role in this, among other things.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, yes, there is an amendment here from the courts on page 3, line 17. It says all civil disputants shall be provided with written information describing the mediation process as provided or approved by the state court administrator. That's being amended, as it would have said before, as provided by the Dispute Resolution Commission, and since that's going away, that particular function is, this bill proposes to have it go away. That particular function will be transferred to the State Court Administrator's Office.
Thank you. And then the other major change in the amendment is an emergency clause.
That's true, Mr. Chairman of the Committee.
Just as a little background, this bill... this bill didn't show up because of any dissatisfaction with the Dispute Resolution Commission, certainly not on this committee. This bill is part of a far bigger picture having to do with the budget crisis that we're in Oregon. So I just want to set that up and make that real clear before we even start. So I will take the first three people, Donna Silverberg, Martha Pagel, and Andy Weislogel. And I sure hope I pronounced most of the names right, if not all of them. Welcome to the committee. If you could all identify yourself for the record before you begin speaking. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. My name is Donna Silverberg, and I'm a full-time practicing mediator in Portland, Oregon, and a small business owner. And I'm testifying today. I'm the president of the Oregon Mediation Association, which is a actually the state's only statewide organization focused only on mediation and mediators. The Oregon Mediation Association is a nonprofit organization. We have about 400 members statewide that are committed to the development, support, and advocacy of mediation in the state of Oregon. We offer mediators and supporters of mediators an opportunity to join together to elevate the quality of mediation services and to expand the availability of mediation programs and services throughout the state. Over the course of this legislative session, we have been working with members of the ADR section of the bar and members of the Dispute Resolution Commission to rethink the role and the function of the Dispute Resolution Commission. And it's from that perspective that I come before you today and ask that you reconsider the decision to abolish the Dispute Resolution Commission as suggested in SB 904. In the discussions that we've had over the last number of months, there have been a number of points that have become increasingly clear to folks around the state. There is a real belief that there is a value to our state's communities and local public services by maintaining and sustaining our local community mediation centers. Over the last couple of years, they've helped 18,700 people resolve conflicts with a resolution rate of around 75%. They've trained 12,000 people in conflict resolution techniques, and over 1,000 people in the state have volunteered their time to work at those programs to help resolve conflicts at low or no cost to folks who can't afford to pay for any other kind of services. It's important for the state to be involved in this process, in distributing grant funds that have been collected through the dispute resolution accounts, and it's important for the state to be involved in order to provide an equitable distribution of county funds, to provide minimal oversight on the way those funds are used, and maintain minimum qualifications for the programs that receive those funds. Additionally, the Dispute Resolution Commission has been extremely capable at resolving public policy disputes through its Public Policy Dispute Resolution Program. It's been very instrumental in helping agencies work towards more collaborative approaches and innovative approaches to resolving some of the state's tough natural resource and community development public policy issues. I know that a number of you are familiar with some of the issues that have been resolved through that program. One of them was through the state's Department of Fish and Wildlife. Staff from the Dispute Resolution Commission worked with that agency to develop a very diverse task force to answer the question about what to do with conservation of native fish in the state of Oregon. That process was reached enough of a resolution that you all didn't have to hear that issue this time during the legislative process, and it looks as though we'll be able to avoid lengthy court proceedings as a result of that as well. So ending any kind of state involvement in public policy dispute resolution runs a significant risk of sending a message both to agencies and to the public that they really shouldn't try to engage in this sort of process anymore, that there really isn't the kind of support from the state and the legislature to work towards more collaborative problem-solving techniques. And finally, the other message that has been transmitted through these conversations is that maintaining the commission and maintaining that oversight of citizens who understand the field and who work in the field of conflict resolution, it is different from the practice of law and the administration at the Department of Justice. But reducing the staffing and administrative costs by 50%, we feel would be able to maintain the kind of quality services that have been continuing at the local programs and also some sort of minimal support of that public policy arm of things. So reduce the cost to the commission by 50%, which would give you about 2 FTE left. And then our recommendation would be to in order to save money and overhead, to move the remaining 2 FTE either to the University of Oregon that has a dispute resolution program at its School of Law and will be having a master's in dispute resolution quite soon, or to the Hatfield School of Government that also has some forms of these sorts of processes in place at this point. So move it to one of these two universities, save overhead, leverage both students and the kinds of grant administrative work that they have at the university setting, and support entrepreneurial partnerships with small businesses and larger corporations around the state. One of the additions, a number of the additions that you would get is that you get increased learning for students in those programs. You have increased opportunities for monitoring and evaluating the services, which is something that's been cut out of the bill in this new bill. No monitoring and evaluating of services that are provided. And it also would provide a more neutral location for the services to be rendered, as opposed to something like the Department of Justice, that by putting this at the Department of Justice, you put the department in that kind of awkward position of having to logistically balance being both a partisan player as an enforcer on the one hand and a neutral administrator on the other. And that's a difficult role for that agency to play, we feel. So we feel that the best approach for you at this point would be through the budget for the Dispute Resolution Commission to reduce it to 2 staff, cut their administrative costs in half, and then make this move in a budget note to one of the universities, either University of Oregon or Portland State. And both of them have expressed some interest in having that program there as a means of attracting students to their programs, so it would be leveraged for both the commission and the university system. Alternatively, if there has already been the move afoot through legislative leadership to support the concepts that are laid out in SB 904, then we have suggested in the written testimony changes to that bill. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's just sort of a point of operational order here.
I noticed the bill comes from the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and at least it's unusual not to have a presentation by someone who proposes the bill. But what I'm hearing here is a discussion of a function that I think is more or less a budget function, a ways and means function. So I guess I'm interested in at least getting some testimony on the record about the effects of the change that are proposed, the changes that are proposed here, and at least if it isn't too unusual to ask the opponents of the bill if they could characterize why they think this bill is here. Since there are no proponents,
I think that's good guidance. However, I don't think we're going to burden our witnesses with separating the budget and the policy. I think that's something we'll have to deal with as we're sitting here to parse those things out.
Well, Madam Chairman, I guess that because the bill came from Ways and Means, I assume there was a discussion of the budget at the Ways and Means Committee.
Actually, there was never a public hearing at the Ways and Means Committee for us to speak to, and this is our first opportunity to speak. So, Chair Burdick, Senator Farrioli, I actually was about to get to the specifics of Senate Bill 904 and the policy, why we think that this isn't the best move to DOJ. So if I may continue a little bit further, I would love the opportunity to answer that question.
Madam Chairman, I did not realize this was the first airing of the issue.
This is the first airing, and this bill will proceed to Ways and Means. So, Senator Farrioli is correct that this is the policy committee, which focuses more on the activities of the dispute resolution commission rather than on the budgetary. But I find your suggestions very helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Proceed.
Thank you very much. Generally, the concept of moving the regulatory function of the Dispute Resolution Commission to the Attorney General's office, we feel is an acceptable move. It's the concept of moving the grant and the administrative functions of working with community programs and with state agencies to talk with them about dispute resolution techniques, alternatives to the more adversarial channels that the DOJ works with, such as courts, administrative hearings, and settlement conferences. We feel that that would be better served at some other place. That moving this to DOJ would require new staff to be hired and trained in the issues that affect effective mediation and mediation programs, and also would require an education of agencies that they no longer need to call DOJ at the end point when a conflict has escalated to the point of needing litigation or some formal adversarial trial, but agencies would need to know to call prior to the escalation of that conflict if there were any hope of some sort of collaborative approach being effective. So from our perspective, it is not a perfect match of purpose of an agency and purpose of the services that are offered to be provided. We've got, in my testimony, I've addressed specific amendments to Section 8, to Section 8, 9, and 11. And I would ask that you just read those, but I'll briefly say that in Section 8, as it is written, it really takes away what is the core of what is currently Chapter 36 about dispute resolution, and suggests that instead of working through in a more non-adversarial approach any conflicts that might come up with with the community programs, that the Attorney General jump immediately to suspending or revoking the program funding. So we would recommend leaving the original language as it is written and replace director with Attorney General at Section 9. We're very supportive of the ideas of an advisory committee that's noted in Section 9, and would suggest that the Attorney General ask that the members of those committees have some background in dispute resolution and that they come from a varied array of practice areas that are done in the field of dispute resolution. And then finally, in Section 11, we would suggest that the distribution pattern for the revenues that are collected, you'll see in Section 11, there are blank numbers there, and right now it reads as dollar amounts. We would make two changes. One is delete the line for the biennium beginning on July 1, 2003, to avoid having to have the legislature address this every biennium, and then add at subsection 1, 70% of those funds collected, and limit the administrative cost on that perhaps to 10%, and at subsection 2, 20% of those funds collected should go to state agency dispute resolution efforts, and at subsection 3, 10% of those funds collected to the Judicial Department for its mediation and arbitration programs. So in conclusion, I'd just like to thank you very much for hearing us today, for giving us the opportunity to speak on this issue. We've been long wanting to talk to legislators about this. As I said, there have been lots and lots of conflicts that have been resolved through the good efforts of the staff of the Dispute Resolution Commission and of the programs that have been funded very well by the state in the past. So we urge that you continue to support these kinds of activities and that you rethink and help the leadership rethink what to do with the Dispute Resolution Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, you have written testimony?
Yes, I certainly do.
Submitting for the record.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Okay. Next.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Martha Pagel. I'm an attorney in private practice with the firm of Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt. I have a cold. I'm sorry. And I also was not able to prepare written testimony, but I would be happy to submit written testimony to the committee. I'm here today in my capacity as a citizen who cares very much about public policy development in the state of Oregon, and largely because of my former roles. I am a former member of the Dispute Resolution Commission. I'm a former agency head. I was the head of the Water Resources Department and Division of State Lands. And I'm a former Assistant Attorney General, so I've worked in Department of Justice. With all those former hats, I am here to support the recommendations that you just heard in Donna Silverberg's testimony, that we recognize, those of us who are involved in dispute resolution and in collaborative process for public policy development, we recognize that change is going to be necessary. You're facing a difficult budget situation, and you're having to make some hard choices. We understand that. But we should make smart choices, and we should make choices that recognize the real benefits that this program has provided to the state of Oregon and that carries them forward as effectively as possible in these hard times. And that boils down to two basic concerns. One, on the community programs that we continue to provide as much support as possible. And I can say that as someone who came to dispute resolution programs with a real bent toward the other side, the public policy side, because that's what I was personally involved in. But as a member of the Dispute Resolution Commission, I learned how valuable these local programs are and how important it is to continue to pass through the money that is paid at a local level to support these local programs. So that's a very important function to continue. Second, on the public policy program, as a former agency head in natural resources, I know how difficult it is to resolve disputes and to try to build consensus in the community. And I also know how much help and support my agency received over the years through the Dispute Resolution Commission programs. And it is very important, if that kind of direct support is not going to be available because there is no commission and separate agency, it's very important for the legislature and for the governor to give the right messages to agencies to continue the commitment to using collaborative process in solving agency issues and developing public policy that has to serve the whole of the state and all of the interests. So it's very important that that message be continued. And that brings me to the third point, that the current construct of Senate Bill 904 would send the what's left of the program to the Department of Justice. And as much as I value the services provided by the Department of Justice, I concur with what you heard from Donna Silverberg, that it's not the right place to be able to send those important messages and to get the job done. So we would urge you to consider other alternatives as you're having to deal with the difficult choice of restructuring the program, but do it in a way that really sends the right messages about our commitment to dispute resolution and collaborative process in public policy, and that supports these local programs that help issues from escalating into litigation.
Thank you. Senator Ringwald.
You know, I apologize. I missed some of the introductory discussion. Was there any mention of the role of the executive director and what will be happening with that position under this bill? Was that discussed?
Not specifically.
I guess I'd like to hear your. I mean, what is the answer to that question? What would happen to the executive director?
Under the bill as it's written,
the correct,
Yeah, under the bill as it's written, the staff would completely go away. The current executive director was the former ADR coordinator at DOJ, and it's my understanding that he may well go back to DOJ. So there would continue to be a relationship of the current director with the program if it were to move to DOJ.
Okay. Chair, is the executive director here? Is he going to testify?
Yeah, he's here to answer questions if we have them. So.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Senators. My name is Andy Weisslogel. I coordinate East Metro Mediation, and I've come here to present some information from the Community Mediation Program perspective. East Metro Mediation has served Fairview, Gresham, Troutdale, and Wood Village since 1992, with a significant portion of the funding coming from the state's surcharge on filing fees, currently through the Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission. We help neighbors, landlords and tenants, and business customers to resolve matters before escalating. Last week, we resolved a situation, a controversial matter between that involved siting a new location for a residential group home for people with mental illnesses. And as one of the people said at the end, thanks, this has been really useful, and as many people say, I hope I don't have to get in a conflict and call you again. Over 50% of our cases have been referred by police or local government staff last year. And last year, we saw resolution in 94% of the cases where both people participated. That's quite successful, and we don't always expect to see those high figures, but I'm always proud when we can announce that. The funding from the state allows us to provide for just one full-time staff, and it's a team of 20 volunteer mediators that do the work, helping over 1,000 people a year. Many have noted that this is a very efficient use of funds, with the many trained mediators volunteering their time to resolve local disputes. The funding from the state of Oregon has been vital to the success of the program. The Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission has been providing guidance and assistance to the counties, and the various counties have varied in terms of their knowledge and their support of dispute resolution. That ends my testimony.
Thank you very much. Other questions for the committee? I have a question actually for Ms. Silverberg. Has anyone done any analysis of money that's saved from the mediation function? Are there studies out there that show the financial savings?
I do know that they have done studies, and I'm not up on what the current numbers are on those, Madam Chair. I think if Mike Niemeyer does come up to answer some questions, that would be an excellent question for him, because they have done some good analysis of the numbers and the kind of savings that there is.
Madam Chair,
yes.
If I may, one footnote that I meant to add in my testimony, just to make sure that the committee is aware that the funding here that we're talking about is not general fund. It is an assessment on court filing fees, and it's distributed then for the community programs and the public policy program.
That's a good distinction. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Well, Madam Chair,
Walker.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. I feel somewhat at a loss here because the proponents haven't come forward and talk to us about what the hell they're doing. Excuse my French. The French always get blamed, but if this is not general fund money and it's assessment, what do you know what the plan is, where the money's needed and what it's going to fund? Instead of funding your commission, where's it going?
The only change that I'm aware of is a shift in some of the revenue over to the Judicial Department. And that shift is in Section 11 of this, and that's the only change that I am aware of at this point with the money. They're not planning on taking it. It is a separate dispute resolution account that is set up to do dispute resolution work in the state of Oregon.
So this is how they increased the Judicial Department budget?
Mm-hmm.
Was based on this?
I'm not sure if this is their way of doing that, but I understand that is one way that is one aspect of this bill that is part of Section 11.
I see.
And
thank
if I
you.
May add to that, Madam Chair, Senator Walker, that the whatever fund shift occurs, if money gets moved over to the Judicial Department, that's dealing with mediation at a stage when you're already well into litigation. And the real beauty of the programs that of the Dispute Resolution Commission and the existing approach to it is that it tries to head that off, keeping matters from getting to the courts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. I think we're going to go a little out of order and call Pete Shepherd from the Department of Justice. And
I'd like Mike Niemeyer to join him up here, and just in case there are questions. Mr. Niemeyer is the executive director of the Dispute Resolution Commission, and then we get to some of these questions here. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pete Shepherd. I'm the Deputy Attorney General. Some weeks ago, the Legislative Fiscal Office sought our assistance on the technical side of what at that time was a concept to transfer portions of the Dispute Resolution Commission functions, to abolish the commission and transfer portions of the remaining functions to some other location, and that was described to us as the Department of Justice as the entity which Legislative Fiscal Office suggested was the preferred alternative there. So we have provided that assistance while reserving our right to object to the abolition of the commission or to the transfer of its functions to the Department of Justice. I understand that we recently have been criticized by some for failing to support the abolition of the commission and by others for favoring its abolition. We feel a little as though we came upon the victim of a hit-and-run accident, bound up the victim's wounds, treated them with ointments, transported him to the hospital, and then were sued by both the hit-and-run driver for saving the only witness to the offense and by the victim for using the wrong ointments. So you can understand that the purpose of my appearance in part this morning is to make clear the Attorney General's position with respect to Senate Bill 904. And that, quite simply, is the Attorney General does not support this bill. Okay. I have submitted to the committee a copy of a letter that the Attorney General submitted to Senator Minnis today with copies to each of you, and I understand there are extra copies available on the table. Let me say just a couple of points about specific issues. First, let me gently disagree with the suggestion that Department of Justice always looks to litigation as the best tool for resolving a dispute. One of the things that's great about practicing law at the Department of Justice is that I think all of us are very conscious of the fact that we occupy the intersection of law and public policy. And as such, I hope that we've been able to instill in our lawyers and across the department the idea that not every problem is necessarily the subject of a lawsuit or ought to be the subject of a lawsuit. And so I hope that as a general matter, that's not the way we approach every problem. Nevertheless, if the Legislative Assembly chooses to assign these responsibilities to us, we will do the best we can to carry out those responsibilities. The Assembly should not ask us to undertake these functions without giving us the resources necessary to do that. And we are working with Legislative Fiscal Office to try and ensure that that happens. We've submitted to the committee some draft amendments which refer to Senate Bill 904 as printed because the -1 amendments at the time were not available to us when we prepared those suggested amendments. And we will continue to work with Legislative Fiscal Office and Legislative Council to craft the best package that we can, given the fact that this isn't our preferred policy option.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. Mr. Shepherd, I find your testimony very revealing. And the testimony from Ms. Silverberg was that they could cut the commission's FTE in half. They'd just have two FTE, and they'd like to merge with one of the universities or the Hatfield School of Government, which sounds like a very easy thing to do, or it's laudable that they're willing to cut their own budget. If they don't do that and we go to this program, it seems to me like it's a lot more expensive to go your direction, or not your direction, but the direction of this bill, because you will definitely have to add staff, and you yet don't know what the fiscal impact is to your department's budget. Do you?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, we in fact have done an estimate for Legislative Fiscal Office, and we've informed them that we think we could perform these functions with two FTE. understand that the draft budget or the budget report that our legislative fiscal analyst has prepared for use by our subcommittee, I believe, refers to 1.5 FTE. Although I'm not certain exactly how, but we do think that two of the existing positions could be transferred and allow us to perform the functions described in the bills.
I would guess that your FTE are more expensive than the commission's FTEs, just given the nature of the department. And the, so I'm not really sure what kind of money we're planning on saving here if they've offered up to cut their own FTE in partnership with the university. So I'm really not getting what we're doing here.
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, I'm not the right...
You don't want the program.
I'm not the right person to ask about the exact numbers associated with that.
All right, thank you, Mr. Shepherd.
Other questions?
No. Mr. Shepherd, I wonder if Mr. Shepherd would care to comment on any knowledge he may have of where this impulse to move this thing comes from. And what is the driver behind this issue?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I'm happy to tell you what I know, which is not very much, but we were contacted by a staff in the Legislative Fiscal Office who indicated to us that it was their desire to develop a policy option to present to their members, and so that's what we did. I don't really honestly don't have any more information than that for you about it.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Niemeyer, if you could introduce yourself for the record and just maybe respond, if you're able, to the question I had earlier about any studies that are out there that show this, the financial savings, not to mention the other ones, but the financial savings from mediation.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. For the record, my name is Mike Niemeyer. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission. With respect to studies, interestingly, Oregon, our Dispute Resolution Commission, has been something of a national model, and as such, we've actually attracted some grants. The Hewlett Foundation, for example, has funded a fairly extensive study of the benefits of mediation, in particular with public policy disputes. We've done a lot of work with the Department of Justice on costs. I dropped off for the committee members last night a report that has a couple of charts in it. I don't know if the members brought that. But in referring to that, there's a couple of charts in there. One is page 3 of 10, which is a chart that shows, for example, the difference between litigation and mediation as it's done over at the Department of Justice. And so there you're looking at, on a case-by-case basis, on average, a difference between $60,000 and $9,000 if you do mediation versus taking something in litigation. So we've got quite a bit of data there showing that comparing the cost of the process of mediation to the cost of litigation, there's clearly a savings there, and that's not unexpected. That's fairly intuitive, I think, that there would be a savings there. The report that I prepared also shows a difference between $5,400 for a typical land use case, a LUBA mediation, versus up to $44,000 for litigation. But when we talk about costs and benefits, we need to address the broad spectrum of dispute resolution that the Commission sees, everything from community dispute resolution programs and any savings that may be realized by the many thousands of cases that are done at that level using volunteer mediators and the significant savings that accrues to doing informal dispute resolution at that point as an alternative to litigation, through the kinds of civil mediation and dispute resolution that occurs in state agencies that we also have a role in, and then all the way at the other end of the spectrum, the complex public policy disputes that are few but quite expensive. So the costs that are saved are both process costs. So in some cases, the process is cheaper by using mediation than it would be to go to court. But you also have to consider the outcome costs in terms of what's the cost of getting good or bad public policy. So as Donna Silverberg mentioned earlier, when you have a fish passage task force that can reach a collaborative solution that all the stakeholders can agree to, there is a considerable public policy benefit that accrues to that versus the years of litigation that might occur and the downside of just getting bad policy out of that on the other end. And the other costs that I would ask you to consider is ones that are particularly important to the Assembly, which is the cost of state agencies. And there's the cost on individual cases, but we're particularly concerned about the systems within state government that use dispute resolution over and over again. And so the state agencies that use dispute resolution or mediation as a routine matter within their dispute resolution system see these benefits that we see on individual cases multiplied many times over. So, again, I would just refer to the numbers in terms of the actual dollars in there as significant evidence of the cost benefits of dispute resolution across that spectrum.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the Senator Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Niemeyer, I really appreciate your report. It's the first real focus I've had about what we're doing here. And I'd like to ask you, did Representative, you state in your letter that Representative Patridge and Senator Schrader asked you to prepare the report. Are they the two who are behind this change? Or did they just ask you to prepare the report in response to someone else who's not shown their face today?
Senator Walker, Chair Burdick, in the class that we take that prepares low-level bureaucrats for surviving state government, the first thing they tell us is to not speculate on the record about why legislators do things. And, so
that's a very good class.
Can legislators take that class?
I think it's two CLEs. I can't remember what it was. So I wouldn't want to offer why.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, that would be a pass, no pass class. you either get the skill or you don't come back.
I'll be as responsive as I can without speculating why what was in people's minds when they proposed this. So.
Okay, so they just asked you to prepare the report. That's all you know.
Yes, and so early on in this process, I was asked to say, well, what are, as Chair Burdick asked, what are the cost benefits of this of this work? You know, what happens if the commission goes away? And that's why I prepared the report.
But let me ask you. You answered them on April 9th. So they had the value of your report, which outlined the value of this program, and yet we're looking at Senate Bill 904, and I just drafted a priority bill the other day that was Senate Bill 908. So I know that this bill just came out real soon, and I could go back and find out when the first reading was. So I understand that we're trying to change, you know, the way government does business and save money, but I'm just very curious about this, and it's getting curiouser and curiouser by the moment. Thank you for your candid comment.
I would dare say you may even see members of this committee down in Ways and Means at some point. Thank you very much, Council.
Sure, Mr. Niemeyer, my understanding is that this does not do away with local mediation. Is that correct, the bill? So there'll still be local dispute resolution programs?
Mr. Taylor and committee members, that's correct. The in terms of the history, and I know you're struggling to kind of see the genesis of this, and what I am aware of, that you know the co-chair's budget had zeroed out the commission, and that original proposal had no provisions for funding community mediation. Okay. It basically took everything and attempted to roll that back into the general fund. So this is different. This does fund local. It provides pass-through for some of the monies to local community dispute resolution programs.
And it continues funding for mediation in the courts, right?
My understanding is that the portion of this bill that assigns some money to OJD basically just replaces general fund money that they have with this fee money, and that that money.
So they'll be able to continue their court mediation.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm just speculating here about how this works, but I would expect that the court's programs involve significantly more money than is on the table with this. So I don't think this saves the court's dispute resolution programs. It's simply just a way of moving some into the general fund. So.
So what it cuts is the dispute resolution commission, right?
That's correct.
And what functions does the dispute resolution commission perform that will now be lost?
In the bill, some of it is just a matter of degree, because many of the components, the public policy mandate for dispute resolution, are still preserved for public policy work. But we're talking about going from a 6.3 FTE to 2 FTE, so it'll be a matter of degree. Certainly, the work that is now being done on complex public policy disputes would effectively be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Some work would continue that would assist state agencies across the board. This envisions a role for things that where there's economies of scale, like the state mediator roster and things that should best be managed in one place. And there'd be a significant reduction in the technical assistance that goes out to community programs. Because there aren't specific dollar amounts, I also don't know. The commission currently provides grants to statewide projects and to assist community programs in other ways. And so without knowing the dollars attached, I'm not quite sure how much of those services would be reduced.
Okay, thanks.
Are there other questions?
Just, Madam Chair, the light bulb's starting to get brighter.
Okay. With that, thank you very much. Appreciate it. We're going to break the rules a little bit here and allow four people up. Brian Johnston, Charles Wiggins, and Coat Hanger Man with Betsy Coddington. This is probably a wild assumption, but I'm assuming Coat Hanger Man will not need a microphone.
Is he signed up?
Oh, he signed up. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Johnston, and we're joined by some unusual people here at the
Coat Hanger Man.
I'd like to drop a little further back, if I may, and try and give you more of a broader picture of this. 30 years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Dispute resolution was not a policy matter in state governments. About 20-some years ago, Neil Goldschmidt appointed a handful of Oregonians, I was one of them, to an Oregon Dispute Resolution Advisory Committee that recommended the creation of a commission, which was then accomplished. And the commission has been functioning since about 88. I'm not exactly sure of that, but I think it was 88. And what we're here today for is to talk about survival. As was just alluded to, the co-chair's budget took it out completely. The neighborhood community dispute resolution programs allowed their voices to be heard. And so then a discussion was held as to how to revive something. And this is the something that they've come up with. And as you can tell by the long list of proponents, the something has some problems. And there is some opportunity here, and the opportunity here is for Oregon's dispute resolution activity to survive. It is it remains a standard setter in the nation, and my strong argument to this committee would be that you take this suggestion and place it down at the University of Oregon. I think that the University of Oregon has the opportunity to do three pieces that are absolutely essential to the long-term survival of the movement, to the furthering of the movement. There's a capacity building task that needs to be done that can't be done by DOJ or someone else. There's a social facilitation among organizations. There's a teaching and scholarship. Basically, it comes down to there's a leadership question. Where are you going to get the leadership? And a commission could continue to exist as volunteers surrounding the a program situs like the University of Oregon. So I think that the co-chairs or whoever offered 904 should be applauded for their willingness to rethink their original position, and now this committee should set some policy guidance and say, but this is what we want. We want a commission that has meaning and has potential.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, would it be fair? I should have asked Mr. Shepard this, but I think I'm going to know the answer to it. Wouldn't you say that if we move this program to DOJ, their function would be more of a ministerial one rather than expanding the capacity, as you just said, was important to the program?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, I think that's exactly correct. I would expect DOJ to do a marvelous job as they do it functioning ministerially, but not to be able to provide the kind of guidance and growth that this movement needs if it's going to continue to flourish. Oregon is the next speaker is a colleague of mine who's done a lot of training and traveling nationally and internationally, and Oregon is one of the leaders in this movement. And we know we've got miles and miles to go before we sleep, but we would be set back if this portion of our activity was left to ministers.
And one final question. Would Oregon have been one of the early states in the country that started this program?
Actually, yes. There were you could really point to a handful, and I'm going to use Oregon, Florida, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Hawaii. Florida has a program that rivaled ours in many ways, and their legislature is meeting in Tallahassee and doing the exact same thing you're doing. They're reconsidering their whole thing and have made a decision to defund it completely, which is a major setback. Theirs was designed primarily, at least it was launched originally, to manage growth-related issues. And they're continuing to grow, and they're taking away the enzyme that allows them to grow peacefully. And I think they'll wind up paying the cost for that.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Wiggins.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Charles Wiggins. I'm a resident of Oregon for going on 15 years, but I teach at the School of Law at the University of San Diego in California. I've been there for almost 30 years, and for the past 8 or 9, I've worked half-time because most of my time when I'm not there is traveling around the country and throughout the world, helping legislators like yourselves, civil servants, NGO groups, business people try and establish and sustain procedures for the cooperative resolution of public and community conflict. It's been amazing for me to see that as nations and as cultures throughout the world are struggling to establish and more importantly, to legitimize the use of citizen-driven cooperative forms of conflict resolution here in my home state, the one that I am very proud to be a citizen of. We're facing the possible setback that we are with respect to the Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission. There are a couple, I think, the word abolish stuck in my mind as I was reading the bill again last night. It's an unfortunate word given the service that has been provided to the state over the last 15 years by the work that has come out of the commission. You've heard a lot about the community mediation programs. They are greatly in need of support. The funding at the state level is obviously not as good as we would like it to be. But they are performing a tremendously useful service in the community. Also, as I've done work I've been translated into 26 languages now in the last 8 years talking about this matter, so I have a good deal of experience in other cultures trying to do this work, and there is no place anywhere in the world that is as advanced, in my judgment, in dealing with complex public policy matters and trying to have citizens resolve problems so that you don't need to get into the difficulties of partisan politics with them, as does the state of Oregon. So it's extremely important to me as a citizen, and I hope to you as legislators, that we make a smart choice here that continues that good work and also preserves your legislative options so that when times are sunnier, as we all hope they will be at some point in the future, we will not have made some irrevocable decisions now that will impose significant costs if we were to revitalize this program. One thing, obviously, you need to consider is, well, if not the Oregon Dispute Resolution, then what? at a minimum, I would hope that this legislature would suspend rather than abolish the Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission. I understand that there is precedent for that in this state. I don't know that, but there certainly is precedent that I've worked with in other states where that is possible. Suspending would allow us to come back and revisit this issue at a time when the economy was more friendly towards these kinds of processes without the transaction costs of having to completely revitalize and re-energize a program from scratch. It also send a strong message that we are not getting out of the business of trying to find cooperative ways of resolving conflicts in this state. The second option is to move to DOJ. I think you've heard some excellent ideas about what you should consider with that move. There are obviously some administrative advantages to doing that. I think you've also heard that there are some challenges that you'll need to consider that would go along with that. And the third option, which you've been presented probably for the first time today with, but is one that I think you really should consider seriously, is the move of this kind of program to an academic institution in the state of Oregon. I'm not familiar with the capacity of the Hatfield School of Government to deal with this transfer. My guess is that they would be competent in doing that. There may be some advantages in being in the city of Portland. I don't know about that, but my guess is that, that would be an option. I do know about the University of Oregon's dispute resolution program, and I would like to just give you a couple of things to think about. First, in other states, the option of housing a large proportion of the state's commitment to dispute resolution and mediation has been housed in academic institutions in Texas, in Missouri, in Ohio, and in Florida, and as far as I can see, with great success for the kinds of synergies that Brian Johnston spoke to you earlier about. Secondly, I have personal experience with the University of Oregon's program. I was honored to be asked to offer a mediation course to their students on two occasions and have participated before. I know the people who are there. I can assure you that they would be committed and enthusiastic and a good repository for this kind of program should you choose an independent academic institution. In closing, I hope we make a smart choice. I hope we continue this good work. I hope we provide some option that will allow us to revisit this issue with ease in the future. And I hope we continue to legitimate this kind of work as extremely important for my state. Thank you
very much. Questions? Hey. Now the star of the show, coat hanger man, Ms. Betsy Coddington.
Good morning, Chair Burdick and members of the committee.
Nice to be here.
I'm coat hanger man. I'm made from coat hangers, and I played a pivotal role in a conflict between neighbors in Hillsborough. They each had an uncomfortable feeling that the other was staring at them over the back fence. These sightings led to accusations of spying. Neighbor A declared that if he were really spying, he would not get caught because of his experience in military surveillance. Neighbor B countered that his experience would enable him to jump over the fence and kick some serious butt. The arguments had both families on edge. They hung blankets in their windows to prevent the other's spying activities. The conflict reached a new height when one of the men installed me, coat hanger man, in his window. He meant to prove to the folks next door that they didn't really have any idea at all who might be looking at them. But it certainly wasn't him. His plan backfired. The neighbors thought that he was standing in the window for hours on end and became convinced that he had gone mad. They became very worried for their safety. In mediation, the parties were able to see how the conflict had escalated from an original misunderstanding. They talked about their personal safety concerns and came up with some mutually agreeable rules for maintaining privacy. Without community mediation, I'd still be staring out a window at an unhappy neighbor. And if I may, I'd like to shift to my other role as the director of the largest nonprofit community mediation center.
Before you do that, I don't know if I reminded you to identify yourself for the record.
I was just about to do that. I'm Betsy Coddington with Resolutions Northwest, which is located in Multnomah County. And we provide neighborhood juvenile victim offender, occasionally an adult victim offender case, family mediation and workplace mediation services, as well as community education and training. I just want to add one point. I think all the testimony has covered a lot of the points that I would want to cover in testimony. But I just want to point out that the Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission, keeping it intact at some level or another, is really about good government. It saves money. We've heard Mike Niemeyer testify to that fact. It can leverage outside money to promote community programs as well as public policy and other programs. It ensures appropriate oversight and best practices, particularly among the community programs. And as a practical matter, I'm calling the Dispute Resolution Commission every day for help, for connections, and it's really an important part of being able to carry out our services on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you very much.
Questions? Madam Chairman. Because of the level of paranoia that I see in this building, I wonder if Coat Hanger Man might be available for rent or lease on a short-term basis, say through the end of July, first part of August.
We'll see if we can mediate a solution on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our final panel will be, and I apologize for the lateness of time here, Lois Kanagi, Sophia Douglas, and Jane Gordon. Thank you. Lois, it is good to see you here again.
It's been a long time, and my goodness, this is the first time this session that I've
Lois
been
and
here.
I go back way back to LCDC days.
Right. Well, for the record, I'm Lois Kanagi from Albany, Oregon. Senator Burdick's comments about our acquaintance in earlier years reminds me that one of the exciting stories I heard, and I should identify myself, first of all, as a volunteer mediator. I've never been a paid professional. I served as a member of the Dispute Resolution Commission for about 8 years prior to my resigning a year or more ago, or retiring there. And one of the stories I heard from public policy mediators was a story of a resolution to a problem that I knew about from my interest in land use issues. It went way back. In the South Coast area, there was a problem about whether a road could be vacated for public use. And this conflict had gone on and on and on and on. And one of the public policy mediators with ODRC was able to resolve that. The stories I heard from those public policy mediators were just fascinating, because that was an area that I had not been acquainted with in terms of mediation. My work on the commission related to chairing and serving on the committee that was an advisory committee relating to the community programs. And I think I was appointed to the commission by Governor Roberts originally because of my work in establishing community programs, first in Benton County and then in Linn County. And this advisory committee worked, for instance, with one particular county who shall go unnamed when these county commissioners decided they did not want to figure out which of two competing programs should receive the state funds that were available for that county. So they threw it back in our committee's lap, and we worked with them. Subsequently, after working out that original mediation and figuring out how they were going to divide those dollars, one program thought they should get 90%, and the other program thought everybody should have 50-50. Well, in any case, that was the kind of thing we did. Another thing that advisory committee did was to make sure that a new program was not going to be staffed only by its paid staff or its administrators, that we insisted that they use volunteers, because that was within the, that was the way the regulations, the legislation had been established. And so the advisory committee just really kept their fingers on what was going on, and then were open to receive comments. I was fascinated by Betsy Coddington's comments a few minutes ago that regularly she phones the office for their help. So it was a real privilege to work with those county programs and see the fine work that they've done. I will not speak further except to say, if there is an advisory committee, it really needs to be representative of the stakeholders. And further than that, I would just support OMA's testimony that Donna Silverberg gave, as well as the testimony of Brian Johnson, Charles Wiggins, and so forth. Thank you very much for listening, and I do hope that your committee in its policy may be the means of having the ODRC survive. It's been a wonderful thing. You know, it's a little bit of what makes Oregon Oregon. I mean, this is, again, one of those wonderful programs, and to simply make it disappear would be horrendous. I think the going to a state institution of higher education would be a very wonderful solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Sophia?
Good morning, Senators. My name is Sophia Douglas. I'm Executive Director of Neighbor to Neighbor, which is the Community Dispute Resolution Center that serves Marion County. And I have brought brief statements from a couple of our volunteers who could not attend today. The point that I wanted to make primarily is that about a quarter of our caseload is referrals from the juvenile department. So our victim offender program is very essential for our county. And a point we wanted to make is that it's essentially a victims' rights program, because not only does it provide a diversion opportunity for the juvenile offenders, but it's one of the few places that victims really have an opportunity to have their needs and their rights met. We have a policy of working for restitution agreements between them and the offenders, and do not leave the table until the victims are able to say that they're satisfied with the agreements that are reached. And that's something that is not available to them in other arenas. Also, I wanted to comment that if we are not able to continue with these programs, of course, there's really no place else for them to go except to the already overcrowded courts. A statement from Craig Bozzi, who is one of our volunteers and also the juvenile probation supervisor at Marion County Juvenile Department, if I may, just a very brief one.
Is it short?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He says he's writing in support of continued funding for the mediation programs. Besides handling disputes between citizens that otherwise could take up precious police and court time and resources, I especially urge continued funding in order to preserve the victim offender mediation. This is a powerful and effective response to some crime and involves the offender, victim, and offender in dialogue and problem solving in a way the traditional criminal justice system is unable to do, and all that with a relatively small price tag. This is especially true when you consider the high cost of law enforcement, legal proceedings, and the correction system. Rather than placing this program's existence in jeopardy, we should be looking at ways to expand the services it provides.
Thank you very much. Jane Gordon, we're just about out of time.
Okay, I'll talk very quickly. My name is Jane Gordon, and I'm an associate dean at the University of Oregon School of Law and the director of the Appropriate Dispute Resolution Program there. I also am a founder of Eugene Community Mediation Board in 1981, and so today is very historically sad for me as well, because I think since 1981, which was right after I graduated from law school, and immediately recognized that litigation was not the only way that we should be resolving disputes, and worked to found a community mediation program. The fact that this state did ultimately support that work and figured out a way to add a surcharge to the filing fee to pay for it made so much sense, and there was so much growth in both policy and support for that kind of work. It's incredibly sad to me that the state, I know, understand, of course, is in a difficult financial situation, but that it would look to use the money that was specifically, you know, funded through the filing fees to support this work for its general fund is really sad. But what I'm really here to say is that the University of Oregon School of Law and the whole entire university would probably be a very appropriate place for this commission to continue its work. I say probably because, of course, we haven't sat down and talked about all of the ways that the details would work. I can tell you that there is a very strong appropriate dispute resolution program at the law school. We're working on an interdisciplinary master's for the whole university. We offer many courses. We have tons and tons of students who are looking for ways to be helpful in this field, research, evaluation, involvement. We have a strong faculty involvement in this field. We have conferences, and we have all kinds of activities in dispute resolution. It's a center of excellence at the law school. And this kind of work, that where we could be supportive of work that's needing to be done in the state, could be extremely exciting and very synergistic. And so we've had some conversations with folks, not very many because it's been very quick, but I know that we are very interested in continuing those conversations and seeing if that fit could happen either in Eugene, and we also have a center in Portland. So we're very interested. We think it would be too bad for this commission to be abolished. It would be more than too bad. It's an understatement. It would be horrific for the commission to be abolished just because of financial issues that really don't affect the commission's work. And I also think that it would be too bad for the commission to be abolished and for the sort of flow-through money to go to an agency that doesn't even want to be doing that. So that's my testimony.
Thank you for your 16 minutes. I'm glad you got a chance to talk because you've been talked about through the whole hearing. I didn't realize who you were. I would try to get you.
Ms. Gordon, no, go away. I need to ask
Senator
a question.
Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the information you gave us about the University of Oregon School of Law. They are a good law school. They have an excellent program. And I know when I was an undergrad and was a work-study student at the law school, third-year law students go out and do things as part of their course of study. And they actually can practice law in certain areas. That started back in the 70s also. So they could be very much involved in this program.
And we are also currently do 2 mediation trainings a year for students. We have like 40 students trained as mediators every year. They want to do work both in programs as well as helping programs. I think that's the other role that they could really serve in terms of support and technical support that's being lost otherwise. Mm-hmm. So we have lots and lots of coursework in it as well as specific trainings for mediators. The students are excited about this as a way to resolve disputes. They really see litigation as appropriate sometimes and very necessary sometimes, but truly understand the importance of looking for any kinds of solutions that might be more beneficial to the parties involved.
Mm-hmm. And I think we all recognize, even your students who are coming out of law school, that we are pricing people out of litigation, out of the courtroom because of fees, and we can't even get in the courtroom because the courtroom is closed one day a week. Of course, that's going to change, but I mean, it's very, and the timetable to get into court is very, very long and very expensive. So the cost savings, I just don't see where they'd come from because we're just going to dump more people into the court system, and you've seen the value of mediation through your program.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Close the public hearing. And if there's no further business before the committee, we are adjourned. Thank you all.